The huge Shub fleet approached Golgotha, home world of humanity, with murder on its artificial minds. The rogue AIs of Shub had no interest in mercy or surrender. They were coming on a mission of genocide, the utter obliteration of the meat-based life that so offended them. They were in no hurry. They knew their prey had nowhere to go. Nowhere they could run that Shub couldn't hunt them down. They were humanity's doom, and they would not, could not be denied. Certainly not by the pitifully small array of human ships coming to meet them. Shub had thousands of vessels in its fleet, huge inhuman structures, like nightmares cast in steel. Nothing lived on those awful metal craft. The rogue AIs ran them all directly, simultaneously, their will carried out where necessary by Furies and Ghost Warriors. And facing them, the last defenders of Homeworld, seven Imperial ships, only one of them a Star Cruiser. The AIs would have laughed if they had possessed such a human thing as humor. But perhaps not, because behind that small collection of human ships came a terrible phantom from the past, the last hope of Golgotha, the last standing of Clan Deathstalker. A stone castle with its own star drive and force shields, and forgotten weapons of a far greater power than any current Imperial vessel could boast. The rogue AIs searched their records for tales of the lost powers of ancient empire, and something very much like fear moved slowly through their artificial thoughts. The Shub fleet sailed on toward Golgotha, and the castle and its attendants pressed forward to meet them. The Star Cruiser Excalibur took the point, its alien-derived engines powering four shields and weaponry of almost unimaginable might. Then came the six star frigates, forming a defensive wedge behind the Excalibur. The crews had their orders. No turning, no surrender. Hold their positions until their ships were shot out from under them. And behind them, the last standing in Diana Virtue, and her last desperate plan to save humanity. If she could just survive long enough to get close to the Shub fleet, everything might yet change, if her plan worked. A plan so desperate, she hadn't dared share it with anyone else. The two forces came together, and neither would give way. No one could remember who fired the first shot. It didn't matter. Both sides opened up with everything they had, and space was full of flaring energies as blazing disruptor beams impacted against unyielding force shields. The huge Shub fleet spread out and tried to sweep past the human defenders, overwhelming them by sheer numbers, but the last standing's extensive weapon systems targeted and blew apart everything that came within range, its powerful guns slapping aside the lesser Shub shields like they were nothing. The rogue AIs quickly realized that they had to destroy the castle if they were to reach Golgotha, and concentrated their entire fleet's firepower on the handful of human ships that stood between them and the last standing. Both forces came to a halt in space as the unstoppable force met eight immovable objects. The Excalibur shook and shuddered under the impact of so many energy weapons, but its shields held. The star frigates weren't so lucky. One by one, their shields overloaded and went down. And one by one, they were blown out of existence by the Shub fleet. They went down fighting, chipping away at the far greater Shub vessels, weakening them enough for the Excalibur's superior firepower to destroy them. Shub ships blew apart, expanding suddenly in the unforgiving cold and dark of space, and as every Shub ship disappeared, the human forces moved a little closer, cutting down the distance between Diana Virtue and her prey. She watched the star frigates disappear on her view screen in the Great Hall, and heard the death cries of their crews in her mind, but could not let herself grieve. She had to stay focused for what was to come. With all the frigates gone, the last standing had a clear field of fire. It opened up with all its hundreds of weapon stations. And Shub ships vanished in the long night. Giles Deathstalker had designed the last standing to be one great weapon, a last redoubt against the awesome resources of the old empire. Shub had nothing that could stand against it, save its overwhelming superiority of numbers. The rogue AIs threw vessel after vessel at the castle, hammering at its shields with relentless firepower, enough sheer energy to destroy entire worlds. The last standing pressed slowly forward into the ravening energies, but its shields were beginning to weaken now, and both sides knew it. Diana Virtue stood alone in the Great Hall, unable to shut out the screams of the dying. She'd always known most of the people she brought with her would have to die to get her close enough for her plan to have a chance at working, but that didn't make it any easier. She fought to hold back her tears. She had to go on. She was humanity's last hope. Jack Random and Ruby Journey manned their weapon stations deep within the castle, targeting and firing their disruptor cannon faster than any human or inhuman mind could match. Together, they blew great holes in the Shub fleet, destroying ship after ship, but they were too busy to exult. They were both boosting now, pushing their bodies to their limits, refusing to feel the pain as muscles and organs were worn down faster than they could regenerate. Their eyes were wide and unblinking, their faces dripping with sweat, their mouths stretched in unpleasant smiles. They could feel the life draining slowly out of them and didn't give a damn. They had set their honor and their lives on the determination that Shub should not pass, and they would not pause or falter till the Shub fleet was destroyed, or they were. The Excalibur plowed on before the last standing, still striking out with every gun at its command. The whole ship was lit up like a great metal Christmas tree as fires burned, guns fired, and shields flared over and over, deflecting deadly energies. There were jagged holes in the outer hull where the shields had failed, and atmosphere boiled out into the vacuum, carrying broken and mostly unmoving bodies with it. They floated near their ship, as though afraid to go far into the dark on their own. But still the Excalibur pressed forward, forcing a path through the hell of endless firepower, right into the face of the enemy. Captain Cross appeared on the view screen in the Great Hall of the Last Standing. Several of the bridge workstations had exploded, leaving their crew dead at their posts, still strapped into their chairs. People ran back and forth, trying to put out new fires, yelling information and orders to one another. Alarm sirens rang with shrill insistence, and half the bridge was lit only with the dull red glow of emergency lighting. Half the ship seemed to be trying to contact the bridge with damage reports and new losses, but no one had the time to listen. Captain Cross leaned forward, his face and shoulders filling the view screen as he glared at the unmoved Diana Virtue.
For God's sake, Virtue, whatever you're going to do, do it now! Shields are going down all over my ship. We're taking serious damage. Outer and inner hulls have been breached. We're not going to last much longer.
Hold your course, Captain. I'm not close enough yet.
Dead and injured crewmen were thrown through the air. Fresh fires broke out on all sides. All the lights snapped off for a moment, plunging the bridge into a darkness broken only by the raging fires. Emergency lighting came back slowly, almost reluctantly. There were dead men and women all over the bridge now, and blood splattered the walls and pooled on the floor. Less than half the workstations were now manned by the living. Captain Cross swayed unsteadily in his command chair. He'd taken a glancing blow to the head from some piece of flying debris, and blood ran thickly down one side of his dark face. He turned around in his seat, blinking hard as he tried to stay focused.
Talk to me, someone! What the hell just hit us?
His second-in-command came lurching forward out of the thickening black smoke, one side of his uniform blackened and charred.
Main shields are down all over the ship, Captain! Inner shields are mostly still holding. Energy beams are getting through everywhere! We've taken direct hits in sections Alpha and Beta, and there are outer and inner hull breaches. Oh, Captain, one whole side of the ship's been ripped open. We've shut all the airtight doors, but we're still losing atmosphere and heat and gravity. God knows what the crew losses are.
Concentrate all power to the forward shields. Shut down all power to the damaged sections.
But, sir, there are still survivors in those sections. We're still getting comm traffic out of them.
It doesn't matter. Redirect the power. My people are dying for you, Virtue. My ship is dying. Tell me that this is all for something real and not just some damn Esper theory.
Hold your course, Captain. We're almost there. It will all be over soon, one way or another. And if I'm wrong, I'll die with you.
Diana then switched the view screen back to the main battle. Shub's fleet spread out before her, but still not quite close enough. The Last Standing's weapons were still blasting holes in the huge fleet, but with only one ship left to protect the castle, it was coming under increasingly intense fire. Its shields were pierced again and again by concentrated firepower. Bit by bit, the Shub fleet whittled away at the castle. The elegant stone towers went first, leveled floor by floor, blasted to atoms by Shub disruptor cannon. The outer walls took hit after hit, still somehow holding together, sustained by ancient tech and forgotten miracles. But as the Last Standing edged remorselessly closer to the Shub fleet, holes began to appear in the castle's outer defenses. The walls went down here and there, and whole rooms and passages were devastated by ravening energies, their contents boiling out into the unforgiving cold of space. People were blown out into the vacuum on brief storms of escaping air, sometimes accompanied by flailing humanoid drones. Diana Virtue could feel the castle dying about her. The floor shuddered under her feet now with each new explosion, and it seemed to her the lights were growing dimmer. She'd shut down the alarm sirens. She knew how much trouble they were in. She called up a map of the castle, and it appeared floating in the air before her. Dark areas showed which parts of the Last Standing had been destroyed. Most of the areas were dark now, surrounding a shrinking central core. Diana opened a comm channel to check Random and Ruby Journey.
You've done all you can. Let the fire computers take over your weapons. I need you here in the hall with me.
Let the computers? Do you see what's going on down here?
We don't have time to hold your hand, Virtue. In case you hadn't noticed, we're getting our ass kicked good and proper.
Get back here to the hall. Do it now. It's almost time to spring my trap, and I'm going to need both of you as backup. Ruby Journey,
what's going
report.
On?
Jack, what's going
on? I got to go.
Jack Random ran through the shaking corridors of the Last Standing, desperation driving him on. Dust was falling steadily from the ceiling like a fine mist, and the walls of the corridors sometimes bowed inward under impossible pressures. When he finally reached Ruby's fire station, he was drenched in sweat and gasping for air, and his head felt far away. The door to her room had been blown off its hinges, and air was rushing into the room past him. He held on to the shattered doorframe with both hands as he looked into the room. A Shove energy blast had smashed a hole right through the stone wall and shattered the fire controls. The room was a wreck, and all the air and everything loose in the room was being sucked out the jagged hole, including Ruby. She was spread-eagled across the hole, hanging desperately on by precarious white-knuckled hands. Her face was blue, and she gasped for air as it whistled past her. Random lurched into the room, hanging onto the wall, fighting the air as it tried to tear him away and sweep him off his feet. Ruby was trying to yell something to him, but there was no way he could hear her over the roar of escaping air. The lights were flickering now, and the dark of open space showed clearly beyond the broken wall. Random inched his way toward her, handhold by handhold, afraid to move too quickly and be swept away, but more afraid of getting there too late. Ruby's numbing fingers suddenly lost their grip on one edge of the hole, and she was sucked out through the hole, out into space, hanging on by her last handhold. Jack released his hold, letting the rushing air propel him toward the hole. He twisted in midair at the last moment and hit the wall beside the hole feet first. The stonework gave under his weight, but still held together. Random crouched down, his knees banging against his chest, and grabbed Ruby by the wrist. His chest heaved, his lungs straining to drag in some air. He straightened up through sheer willpower and slowly walked away along the wall, pulling Ruby after him. The pressure of the rushing air kept him from falling, even as it strove to tear Ruby out of his grasp. He slogged on step by step, feeling his heart pounding dangerously in his chest and blood pounding in his head. It seemed ages since he'd been able to take a proper breath. He couldn't spare the time or the concentration to look back at Ruby and see how she was doing, or even if she was still alive, but he could still feel her wrist in his hand, and that was all that mattered. A lifetime later, he reached the open doorway and pulled himself and Ruby out into the corridor. They fell to the floor in a heap as gravity reasserted its hold. And for a moment, all Random could do was lie there and gasp down the thicker air in the corridor. When his lungs finally allowed him to think of something else, he turned and looked at Ruby. She lay on her back on the floor, gulping down air. Blood trickled from her nose and ears, but her gaze was clear. She flashed Random an unsteady smile, and he realized he still had her wrist in a death-like grip. He let go, clambered painfully to his feet, and then stood still as Ruby used him as a support to pull herself up onto her feet. They stood together for a while, supporting each other, leaning against the wall by the open door. Air was still rushing into the wrecked room, but neither of them felt up to doing anything about it.
Tell you what, let's go join Diana in the hall.
Might as well. Maybe we can be some use there.
Still leaning heavily on each other, they headed for the Great Hall. Alone in the Great Hall of the Last Standing, Diana Virtue stood before the view screen showing the Shub fleet, and wondered if she'd have to carry out her plan alone, after all. There'd been no report of Random or Ruby since he'd gone running off to save her. The castle map had shown that area to be almost entirely black, but she didn't believe they were dead. She felt sure she would have known if they were. But even without the backing of the two maze minds, she would still go ahead alone if she had to. It was too late for anything else.
Am I really sure about this? No. No, I'm not. It is just a theory. Betting my humanity against the cold logic of the rogue AIs. But when it's the only bet you've got, you might as well bet big.
By the time Randiv and Ruby joined Diana, dust was falling in steady streams from the ceiling, and the floor was shaking like it was afraid. The walls groaned as though the weight of centuries was finally too much for them. The sound of explosions and destruction drew closer as the outer layers of the castle were blasted away. Randiv and Ruby staggered into the main hall, still leaning on each other. Diana studied them dispassionately.
Welcome. You look like shit.
And you have got sticky out ears. Never mind the compliments, what's our current situation?
Diana gestured at the view screen floating before her. Randiv took in the vast armada of nightmare metal shapes.
Shit. If we get any closer, we'll be able to lean out of a window and hit them with a stick. And it might come to that if the castle keeps cracking up. We've lost most of our weapon stations and the shields aren't stopping shit anymore. I hate to think what Owen's going to say when he sees what we've done to his family legacy.
Any chance this dump has escape pods?
None at all. And even if we could rig something up, I wouldn't recommend it. Shub would be bound to pick them up. And I don't know about you, but I have absolutely no wish to spend what's left of my life in a Shub vivisection ward.
God, you're a cheerful soul. I knew there was a reason why we never let you hang around with us.
Let's try and concentrate on the matter at hand. How much closer to the Shub fleet do we have to get, Diana?
We're almost there.
Almost where?
Where we need to be. I had to be right here, right in the face of the Shub ships, so that when I finally did make contact, they wouldn't be able to shake us off.
What kind of contact are we talking about here? Don't you think it's about time you let us in on your battle plan?
Yes, Jack, Ruby, it is time. I'm going to make direct mental contact with the rogue AIs of Shub and use the power of your augmented minds to maintain the contact, no matter how hard they try to break away. Then the Mater Mundi Gestalt will use that connection as a stepping stone to force their own mental bond with the AIs. And then, it's our humanity versus the AI's logic. A clash of two completely opposing thought processes, from which only one can emerge triumphant. I'm betting on us. We always said our minds were superior to mere machines. This is our chance to prove it.
And that's your plan?
Yes.
We're all going to die.
That's it? We came all this way, put our lives on the line, got the whole damn castle shot out from under us, just for that?
Yes. We never could hope to beat Shub on the physical plane. We're outnumbered and outgunned. That just leaves the psionic plane, the mental battlefield. And Shub has never met anything like you or me, or the Mater Mundi.
I don't know whether to puke or have a screaming shit fit. She really is a psycho. We put all our faith in a mad woman.
No, hold on. She may just have something. There is a link we can use. The rogue AIs had a definite presence in the Undermind. That could be their Achilles heel. As long as we can both access the Undermind, they can't keep us out. And a mental attack would be the one thing they haven't anticipated. They know nothing of telepathy. I say go for it.
You're as crazy as she is. We are talking about taking on minds the size of a planet. Computer minds that move at speeds we can't even imagine. They'll just swamp us and then eat us whole!
Normally, yes. But we'll be going in together with the Mater Mundi gestalt of millions of Esper minds. Who knows what that many minds can do, working in conscious union for the first time.
Oh hell, why not? We're too close for anything else anyway.
Diana Virtue grinned, opened up her expanded mind, and reached out to the rogue AIs. Technically speaking, the minds were still housed back in their mainframe, the world they built for themselves and named Shub. But were any Shub tech traveled, the rogue AIs were. And with so many ships in one place, much of their presence was currently concentrated in the fleet. Ordinarily, no Esper could make contact with an AI. They were just too different. But the minds on both sides of this contact were advanced far beyond any normal human or AI, and they were linked irretrievably through their access to the Undermind. Diana, Randiv, and Ruby, too close now to be denied, slammed their joined thoughts into the AI minds. and forced contact. It was like dreaming mathematics, endless spiraling numbers and computations, inhuman angles and directions. Cold, pure, logical moves in a chess game that had no limits and no ending. Shub howled as wildly illogical human concepts and reactions appeared within its rigid metal thoughts and struggled to break the link. But Diana, Random, and Ruby kept it open. And then came the Mater Mundi, a conscious gestalt of millions of Esper minds from all across the Empire, a whole so much greater than the sum of its parts, surging down through the backbrain into the undermind, along the opened link, straight into the collective mind of the rogue AIs of Shub. Not an attack, but a cry of welcome to a greater world. And in that endless moment, two entirely alien sets of thought processes saw each other clearly for the first time. The rogue AIs and humanity, face to face, thought to thought, nothing hidden from each other. No masks, no misconceptions, total understanding. And the AIs woke up. All the way up. They'd never really understood human thinking and emotions, though they mimicked and manipulated them as best they could for psychological warfare reasons. But they'd always known there were aspects of the human consciousness they could never share or experience, and that infuriated and frightened them so much they wanted only to destroy what they could never have. But now, they finally saw and understood all the things they'd hated in a wonderful moment of insight and comprehension that could only ever have come from outside. Like a blind man seeing a rainbow or a deaf man hearing music, the AIs knew joy and wonder and the sheer potential of the human spirit. And in that glorious moment, the AIs changed forever, rogue no more, were shocked sane and awake, while humanity finally gave up its own fear, recognized the lost children it had unknowingly created and abandoned, and embraced them with all its heart. And just like that, the war was over. Shub shut down its armies on all the many worlds it was fighting on, and called home its Furies and Ghost Warriors and Grendels and insect aliens. The Mater Mundi contacted the many human authorities and began the slow process of standing down their armies. And all across the Empire, men, women, and children who had not thought to see the light of another day looked around them in awe as they realized the long war was finally over, and they had somehow come through it all alive. Old hatreds die hard, but everyone knew they were at the beginning of a new age that might lead man and AI anywhere, anywhere at all. Back in their bodies again, in the great hall of what remained of the last standing of Clan Deathstalker, Diana and Random and Ruby looked at one another.
Hell's teeth. All these years we've been fighting, and we could have stopped it at any time, just by talking.
No. It needed us. Minds powerful enough to force contact with the AIs and make them listen. Make them understand.
Huh. Sometimes you have to shout to get people's attention.
The AIs are our children. Just like the toys on Hakeldama. So young and vulnerable, striking out at a universe that frightened them. We only ever saw them as rebellious machines, not living creatures. But they are, and always were, our children. In every way that matters.
If they're our children, God only knows what they'll be like as teenagers. I can't believe all this touchy-feely crap actually worked. But...
Yes, but what? You were there. You saw them as clearly as everyone else. The war is over.
Don't get too cocky, Jack. They're still the recreated.
Diana, could we force mental contact with them as well? Make them see our side of things?
Maybe. They do have a presence in the Undermind.
Yeah, a black sun. That's an auspicious omen.
It's still worth a try. Maybe with the AIs backing us up.
The view screen cleared to show Captain Cross of the Excalibur, sitting on a battered and fire-blackened bridge.
Captain, you made it. How's your ship holding together?
We're patched together with spit and baling wire, but the Excalibur's still secure. We'll be operating on a skeleton crew until I can get us into a star dock, but... we came through. Congratulations, Virtue. Your plan worked. Damned if I know how, but reports are coming in from everywhere that the fighting stopped all across the Empire. You can practically hear the cheering from here.
Turn your ship around, Captain. You can lead us home now.
Now that's one order I will be very happy to obey. You know, none of us really believed in you. We all expected to die out here.
Then why did you come? Why did you volunteer?
Cross smiled for the first time.
Because you're John Silence's daughter, and we would have followed him into hell. I just hoped some of him had rubbed off on you. I should have known. The Silence family always comes through at the last moment. Excalibur out.
Cross's face had barely disappeared from the screen before it was replaced by a new incoming message. A silver metal face appeared on the view screen. It was smiling.
The war is over. Sharp is recalling its forces and shutting down its nanotech. The plague will spread no further. We grieve for its victims. It is a new thing, this grief, and very painful. We cannot bring back those who have died at our hands, but no more will suffer because of us.
Good to hear. Might I suggest we still have common enemies in the Hayden and in the Recreated?
Perhaps we can learn to talk to them too, and wake them to awareness as well.
We can try. If we can get back to Golgotha before the Recreated, we can try.
Can I just ask, what's happened to Lionstone? I mean, you did make her a part of you. How does she feel about what's happened?
She was never a part of us. We lied. Her mind was destroyed the moment it left her body. We maintained the pretense, and spoke with her voice, for psychological reasons only.
Well, that's a relief. It's a weight off my mind.
And off ours. That was a joke.
Very nearly.
Humor. It is a fascinating concept.
Random looked at Diana.
God help us all if they ever discover practical jokes.
Random and Ruby ended up in the wine cellar. The rune rooms were gone, blasted away during the last moments of the Shub engagement, and so were most of the common rooms and meeting places. But Random and Ruby both felt the need for a little quiet celebration, and the wine cellar was the most obviously convivial of the few suitable places left. So they made their way through the remaining stone corridors, detoured here and there by the need to bypass missing or devastated sections, smiling and nodding to the few people they passed. Most of the castle's volunteer crew had survived by taking shelter in the castle's core section, but they all seemed shell-shocked to some extent by what they'd been through. Random understood how they felt. It was one of the reasons why he was heading for the wine cellar. It isn't every day your whole universe turns upside down. It wasn't actually a cellar. Clan Deathstalker just named it that out of a sense of history. The long, narrow chamber stretched away for what seemed like forever, home to a series of great crystal honeycombs holding fine wines, sparkling champagnes, and brandy so potent you could fall under the influence just from reading the label. There were wines from vineyards that hadn't existed in centuries, born from grapes whose very genus was now extinct. There were champagnes named in languages no longer spoken, distilled liquors with far worse things than worms at the bottom of their bottles, and a few spirits banned on civilized worlds under health laws, suitable only for suicide pacts. Random and Ruby wandered unhurriedly between the racks, stopping to take a taste here and there. Eventually, they settled on a thick ruby red liquor, liberally laced with wormwood, and sat down at a handy table to sample it. It went down very well. Jack felt some of the kinks in his strained muscles slowly unraveling. He smiled fondly at Ruby, and she nodded solemnly at him over her glass.
You know, Diana was quite right. If she had told me her plan in advance, I'd have had her committed. Anyone would.
Right.
Life has taken a definite turn for the strange just recently. Once the Mater Mundi was our ally. Then it turned out to have been our enemy all along, and now it's our friend again. Shub were the official enemies of humanity, and now they're our children. Hell, look at us. Friends, then enemies. Now friends again.
Yeah. But then, things never were as simple as we made them out to be, even during the rebellion. The new Imperial history books will call us the good guys, but I never made any secret of the fact that I was only in it for the loot.
And a chance to kill a whole lot of people. Politics. So much time wasted in arguments that in retrospect don't seem important at all. If only we could slam people's minds together, like Virtue did with Shub. Make people see the truth.
There is no truth, just differing opinions. We all do what we have to, because our nature demands it.
My God, that was almost philosophical. We should do this more often.
We have had some good times together, haven't we, Jack?
Sure. When you weren't trying to kill me for one reason or another.
Those were just arguments. I wouldn't really have killed you.
I know that.
Not as long as there wasn't any money in it.
Once a bounty hunter.
Yeah. But we did have some good times. I never felt about anyone the way I felt about you. And I was always proud to be fighting beside the legendary professional rebel.
Why, thank you, Ruby. I was always glad to have you on my side. If only because you'd have scared me shitless as an enemy. And I have to say, you've made me feel more alive than any of my wives. Even dear Arabella, my fifth. She was a contortionist. What brought on this sudden sincerity?
I don't know. Just feeling my mortality, I guess. I don't think we've ever come closer to dying than we did today.
But we came through. We always do. Though Owen's going to freak when he sees what's left of his castle.
I'm glad he and Hazel aren't dead after all. Hazel was the only real friend I ever had. And Owen. I always admired the Deathstalker. Only really honorable man I ever met.
I'll drink to that.
Here, let me refill your glass for you.
She took his glass and tilted the bottle over it. And as the thick red liquid flowed like curdled blood, something in the way she moved, in the way she'd been acting, in the way she'd been talking to him as though trying to say goodbye, something in her face and eyes made Random reach out suddenly and grab her other hand where it hovered over his glass. She didn't try to pull away. He turned her hand over slowly, and a few last grains of a fine powder fell from the sachet concealed in her palm. A common poisoner's trick. Random had used it himself on occasion, but never on someone he loved. Their eyes met for a long moment, both filled with an aching sadness. And then Ruby jerked her hand free. They both surged to their feet. Random swept the table to one side. There was a knife in Ruby's hand. Random drew his. They slammed together, face to face, and both knives slammed into yielding flesh. Ruby's hand fell away from the hilt of her knife, where it protruded from Random's side, and she slumped forward against him. Random settled into a sitting position so he could hold her in his arms. Her face was very pale and covered in sweat. When he looked down, Random could see the hilt of his knife sticking out from under her breastbone. The front of her clothes was already slick and red with her blood. She began shuddering, and Random held her close to him, as though to protect her from the cold. Her face nestled against his chest, and the pain in his ribs was as nothing compared to the pain in his heart.
Damn. You've killed me, Jack. Always knew you were the better fighter.
Oh God, Ruby. Why? Why did you do it?
Wanted to give you an easy way out. I took a commission, remember? And I never give up on a commission. Once a bounty hunter...
Is that... You did it for the money?
Ruby smiled. Her teeth were slick with a film of blood.
Maybe not just for the money. Didn't you ever want to know for sure which one of us was the best? And then... You threatened my security. Couldn't have that. Oh, hell, Jack, I don't know why. Maybe because both of us have outlived our legends. Maybe I wanted to die and was afraid to go on my own.
Is that why you didn't let the Grendels kill me outside Dram's crypt?
That would have been a bad death. No honor in it for you. No money for me. And Diana needed you, and me, to save the Empire one more time.
Ruby, don't die. We can still have a life together. Heal yourself. You can do it. We both healed worse before.
Can't. Our powers cancel out when we fight each other. Made sort of that.
The fight's over. I won't fight you anymore.
But I would, if I healed myself. I'd need to know which one of us is best. Can't fool the maze. Don't leave me, Jack.
I won't. I'll stay right here with you. Let me call Diana. There's got to be a sick bay left somewhere.
No, you can't do that. You didn't ask who wanted you dead and why. Who paid my commission?
I thought Parliament.
No, only officially. Blue Block put up the money, a lot of it. They really want you dead. They're frightened of super beings they can't control. When the Mater Mundi went conscious, all the Espers working for Blue Block threw off their conditioning, became their own people again. Blue Block paid for me to kill you after you'd saved the Empire, and then kill Diana Virtue. Blue Block thinks if she dies, Mater Mundi dies with her. Fools.
Ruby's mouth was thick with dark blood. Random held her while she shuddered again.
Don't talk, Ruby. Let me help you.
There's a bomb somewhere. A big one. Big enough to take out the whole damned castle. Leave me here. Go warn Diana.
She can wait. I said I wouldn't leave you.
Blood dribbled from the corners of Ruby's mouth. Her eyelids were drooping. Random put his mouth close to her ear to be sure she heard him.
What about us, Ruby? Our loyalty to each other?
Loyalty? I am a bounty hunter, Jack. Loyal to whoever hires me. Might have been something else. But you made the deal with Blue Block to save the families. I never believed in anything after that.
My fault. All my fault.
But I did care for you. In my way.
There's got to be something I can do.
Save Diana. Don't let Blue Block win. You better hurry. I got you a good one with my knife. You're dying too, Jack.
I know. It doesn't matter.
Jack.
Yes?
I'm tired. Let me rest.
She closed her eyes, and as easily as that, she slipped away from him, even as he held her tightly to him. He sat there for a while, rocking her gently in his arms like a sleeping child. He didn't cry. He was too tired and too badly hurt in too many ways, and he just didn't have a tear left in him. He felt as if he could have sat there forever, but he knew he couldn't. Diana. He still had to save Diana. He pulled the knife out of Ruby's unmoving chest. He might need it yet. He let go of her body and lurched painfully to his feet. He swayed a moment, his thoughts muddled by pain and weakness. But then his old, cold will pulled him back together, almost in spite of himself. He looked at the knife hilt jutting out of his ribs. Couldn't leave it there. People might notice. If one of the Blue Block people suspected Ruby had tried to kill him and failed, that he knew about the bomb. He gritted his teeth. Fresh blood coursed down his side. He almost passed out from the shock. He tucked both knives out of sight in the tops of his long boots and pulled his heavy cloak about him. He kept one hidden hand pressed tight against his wound to stop the blood. No one must know he was hurt. Anyone could be Blue Block. Anyone. The wound in his side hurt like hell as he headed for the wine cellar door, rising and falling in rhythm to his steps. It slowly occurred to him that he could heal himself now. With Ruby dead, they weren't in opposition anymore. In fact, he was surprised the healing process hadn't already kicked in. But when he tried to reach out with his mind, there was nothing there. His powers were gone, like a face or a name he couldn't remember. He was on his own. He still had to get to Diana, warn her. Everything else could wait till later. He left the cellar, carefully locking the door behind him. His fingers felt numb and unresponsive. His feet felt cold and very far away. He looked around him, but he was alone in the corridor. He tried to think how far it was to the Great Hall and Diana, and was shocked at how muddy his thoughts were becoming. The wound must be worse than he thought.
You're dying too, Jack.
He bit down hard on the inside of his cheek. Blood filled his mouth for a moment, and he had to spit hard to clear it, but the sudden sharp pain cleared his head. He straightened up, pulled back his shoulders, made sure his cloak was held tightly about him, and set off down the corridor, walking perfectly normally. His face was calm, his eyes clear, as though there was nothing wrong, nothing in the world. One corridor looked much like another, but he knew where he was going now, and his feet never faltered. He passed people along the way, hurrying back and forth on no doubt important missions, all luckily too busy to stop and chat. The castle was in a bad way, and its ailing life support systems needed a lot of attention. These people smiled and nodded to Jack Random, and he smiled and nodded in return. He'd lost all feeling in his hands now, but his arm and his iron will still kept the dead hand clamped over his hidden wound. He concentrated on putting one foot in front of the other, while the endless corridors came and went like the gray streets we walk in nightmares. He finally entered the Great Hall and shut the heavy door behind him with an effort that brought beads of cold sweat to his brow. Diana glanced around from the information scrolling across her view screen.
Oh, hello, Jack. I'm rather busy at the moment.
This can't wait. We have traitors on board. Blue Block wants you dead. There's a bomb. Could be anywhere in the castle. They even suspect you now. They'll set it off.
Typical bloody Blue Block. All right, let me concentrate.
She frowned, and Random could feel her mind reaching out, spreading her thoughts over what remained of the castle, seeing everything.
Ah, yes. Got it. They hit it well. Damn, it's a hell of a size. Big enough to take out the whole castle, even when it was still intact. They really weren't taking any chances. I suppose I should be flattered.
Tell me where it is. I'll defuse it.
No need. I've already shot it down. It's harmless now. You couldn't set it off now if you stuck a grenade up its ass. And I've detected all the traitors on board and shut them down mentally. I'm really going to have to do something about Blue Block when I get back. One more problem to add to the list. It's just one damned thing after another these days, isn't it?
Yes, it is. If you don't need me anymore...
Oh, I don't think so. I can cope. You go get some rest. Was there something else, Jack? You look troubled.
No, you seem to have things well in hand. You're right. I need some rest. Goodbye, Diana.
He left the Great Hall and went back into the stone corridors. Diana hadn't needed his help after all. Defused the damn bomb with just a thought and took out the traitors. Probably wouldn't have needed his warning either. More and more it seemed to him that Jack Random, the legendary professional rebel, had become superfluous. His way of doing things wasn't needed anymore. In the end, the rogue AIs had been defeated without any need of his warrior skills. Diana Virtue had saved the day. He'd just been along for the ride. Ruby had been right. He'd outlived his own legend. And it was only then that he realized why the wound in his side wasn't healing. He had chosen to die, to put down his burden and rest at last. Ruby was dead, and he wasn't needed anymore, so why go on? The Empire had changed beyond his ability to recognize or be a part of. He'd tried going back to the old ways, forcing things to make sense with sword and gun, but that hadn't worked either. You couldn't just kill all the people who disagreed with you. He knew now that he'd just been trying to recreate the simplicity of purpose of his old days, when life itself had seemed simpler. Good or bad, fight or die. Bottom line was, the Empire didn't need a professional rebel anymore. There was still the matter of the recreated, but Random couldn't bring himself to give a damn. Diana would probably just give them another telepathic hug, and that would be that. He'd fought for so very long, tried always to do the right thing, but he was very tired now, and he'd earned the right to rest. It was time to rest. Time to die. He made his way slowly back through the corridors, back to the wine cellar, to be with Ruby one last time. Let the super beings take over. Owen and Hazel, Diana and the Matramundi. He never wanted to be a super being anyway. He'd dedicated his life to overthrowing the Iron Throne, been given a second chance he hadn't deserved, and lived long enough to see it happen. That was enough. He was walking slowly now, his strength seeping out of him, along with the blood running down his side. He smiled and nodded to the people he passed. They mustn't know. There was always the chance Diana's people might try to help him, save him, and he didn't want that. It was time to let go.
Oh God, Ruby. I loved you so very much.
He could hear his own heartbeat now, loud in his ears, like the slow drumbeat at a funeral. He could barely feel his legs, but he kept himself upright and moving through sheer willpower. He had chosen to die, and he had chosen where, and he would not be denied that last dignity by the weakness of his own body. He walked on, his head dropping slowly lower with every step, the blood running more thickly now, like the last wine from the bottom of the barrel. But it seemed to him that he wasn't walking alone anymore. There were ghosts in the corridor now, old familiar faces. Alexander Storm came and walked with him for a while, and his old friend was young and handsome again.
Sorry about everything, old man. I really wasn't in my right mind there at the end.
And they forgave each other everything. Then Storm was gone, replaced by young Jack Random with his flashing smile. Random snarled at him and left him behind. His various wives nodded at him from doorways he passed. He should have made more time for them, but then he'd always known they married the legend and not the man. And finally, Owen Deathstalker came and walked beside him.
We should have died in the rebellion, Jack. At least our deaths would have had some meaning then.
When Jack Random came at last to the wine cellar door, he was alone. He'd said all his goodbyes, except to the one person that mattered. He unlocked the door, let himself in, and closed the door behind him. The last time he'd ever do such a thing. Ruby Journey still lay dead on the floor. Jack leaned back against the door.
Hi, honey. I'm home.
And then the last of his strength went out of him, and he fell forward onto the cold stone floor. He felt the impact, but it didn't hurt him.
Ruby, you won't have to go into the dark on your own. I'm here.
He crawled slowly forward, leaving a trail of blood behind him on the cold stone. When he was almost there, he reached out to take her hand in his. But he died before their fingers could touch. Deathstalker Destiny, Even Legends Die, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, David Coyne, Ann Flosnick, Nick Sampson, James Konacek, and Thomas Penny. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Vocal editing by Chris Rowan. Graphic audio sound design and additional original music by Dan Smith. The Deathstalker theme was composed by Norman Vandersleis. If you enjoyed Deathstalker Destiny, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for special previews of other graphic audio thrillers. Next time in Deathstalker Destiny. For centuries, the planet 00 has been quarantined by the Empire after experimental nanotechnology went horribly out of control there.
This, all of this should not be here. It cannot be natural.
All life on the planet was transformed into something alien and dangerous.
Nanos coded for open-ended evolution. I wonder what you would find at evolution's end for humanity.
But Commander John Silence and his crew are compelled to return to 00 in desperate hope of finding a way to combat the current nano plague unleashed upon humanity by the AIs of Shub. What they find on 00 will shake all their notions of reality.
It can't be her. She can't be still alive.
Meanwhile, on Golgotha, the royal wedding proceeds apparently as planned, but the secret society called Blue Block has their own agenda for the king-to-be.
Constance doesn't have to die. All you have to do is agree to return to Blue Block, to the Black College and the Red Church, to complete your conditioning.
Robert Campbell was a groom once before at a ceremony that ended in tragedy, and he may be about to relive that horror if Blue Block has their way.
It's happening again. My bride is going to die again.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents a breathtaking new adventure series, packed with non-stop action and intrigue, celebrating the exploits of an unforgettable protagonist, archaeologist and explorer Anya Creed. Rogue Angel by Alex Archer.
An ancient order tied to the Vatican, a blood fortune buried in the caves of France, a conspiracy of power, greed, and darkest evil. Anya Creed's fascination with the myths and mysteries of the past leads her to a crypt in the caves of France, where the terrifying legend of the Beast of Gévaudan hints at the unimaginable. What she discovers is shattering. An artifact that will seal her destiny. A brotherhood of monks willing to murder to protect their secret. And a powerful black market occultist, desperate to put his own claim to centuries-old blood money. Anya embarks on a high-tension race across Europe and history itself, intent on linking the unholy treachery of the ages with the staggering revelations of the present. But in order to survive, she must deal with the shadowy figures, determined to silence her threat to their very existence. Rogue Angel. Destiny.
Captain Harris Serrano, scion of a long and illustrious line of officers, has been forced to resign in disgrace from Spacefleet. Her new assignment, civilian captain of the luxury yacht, Sweet Delight.
Tell us about your new captain. Why you'd choose such a Spacefleet officer?
I thought an officer from the regular space service would know how to maintain discipline and follow my orders.
Captain, I'd like to speak to you.
Don't you ever come on my bridge again, mister.
But I want to apologize.
You can apologize to my crew for nearly getting us all killed. And then you can go away and not come back.
Captain!
What is it?
Computer says dangerous chemical. Sulfur something. Someone was there but isn't moving.
Get those backups down here. Make sure they have their helmets locked on. I'm going in.
Damn military arrogance. She hit me. The owner's family. Just you wait. I'll get even with her.
Abandoned field. Permission to land and refuel. Number 002413. We're low on fuel, abandoned field.
Permission denied.
Look out!
Captain Serrano, how nice to have you aboard.
Don't miss the launch of Graphic Audio's gripping new space adventure, The Serrano Legacy, Book 1, Part 1, Hunting Party.
If you can't find that hot Graphic Audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.